like, you know, we teach kids, if they don't know how to read, we teach them how to read. If they don't know how to write, we teach them how to write. If they don't know math, we teach them math. But when they don't know how to behave, we punish them.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet at WFPR.FM and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial 102.9 here in our glorious studio today with a couple of folks, the early employees of the SAFE Coalition. This is going to be a fun conversation, folks, so pull up your chair and let's listen in. And we have with us today...
My name is Chavlin Santana, and I am the Director of Collaborative Care of SAFE Coalition.
Okay, and?
Yeah, I'm Emma Kelly. I'm the Director of Adolescent Wellness.
Two directors? This is cool. And I remember it was only, what, 6, maybe 7 years ago, SAFE Coalition was an idea, and it was a couple of people, and now in the 7 years, you've got, based on the social post, you've got something every day across multiple arenas to service, whether it's the youth, the mothers, families, grandparents. We're going to unpack that a little bit. So, how did you initially get involved? Let's start there.
So previously, I was working in the mental health industry, same organization as Jen Levine, who's the CEO of SAFE.
And a bottle rocket of energy.
Yes. And, you know, we had a great working relationship. And so when it was time for me to transition, I reached out, and Jen was able to open up an opportunity as SAFE was growing.
Right. Good, and then you've certainly been busy ever since.
Very much so.
Constant.
Yes.
And then along came some point in time, Emma, you joined.
I did. So yeah, Shav was like, I think you're the first official employee of SAFE full time. And then when I first started my relationship with Jen and Shav, I was interning at Riverside as a college intern.
Okay.
I went to UMass Amherst, and it was, I think, my senior year. And Riverside actually had never had any college interns before, but Jen decided to take a chance and let me intern. I was so lucky. I learned so much in the short time I was there. And I became friends with Shav, too. And so after that, I graduated in 2020 during, like, the complete height of the pandemic, like everything had just shut down.
Ouch, everything changed.
Yeah, didn't get my graduation, but it's okay.
You got your diploma.
I got my diploma, yeah.
And which is really the most important part.
Exactly. And I got to, you know, classes were really easy at that point, so it was nice. But I graduated and I moved to Nantucket because I was like, oh, everything's shut down. I got to do something. So I moved there. I worked at the Boys and Girls Club because I loved working with youth forever. And I also worked as a waitress. So I worked a lot of hours for a year, saved up money. And then when I moved back, I texted Jen and I was like, oh, can I volunteer until like I'm figuring out what my next move is? And Jen was like, yeah, come. Do you want to come tomorrow? And I was like, okay. So I showed up to the blood drive bank they had in Norfolk office, and Jen and Shav were like, we would love for you to come work here and help us out. And I was like, I would love to. I loved those two. So ever since then, we've been all together.
Yes. Yep. I remember the Norfolk office. I distinctly remember it was just before COVID shut down.
Yep.
That the opening was, and the room was so packed. I was actually at the doorway, keeping the door open to have some air coming in through because the room was so packed with so many people celebrating the opening.
Yes. I remember the opening. It was such a glorious moment, I'm sure, for like Jen, Jim, and the rest of the team. That, you know, everything that, something that started off as a need, going door to door, you know, driving in a car, going to a YMCA, to now seeing the fruition of all their hard work into a building and just being invited to be part of that was awesome.
It's truly been
an
evolution, because I remember even in that space, and I think you have it in the current space, you had the room in plain sight.
Yes.
So that was kind of like parents in particular would come in and you'd help identify, well, mm-hmm. what's here? What should you be looking for?
Yes. And like how to have conversations. I think, you know, it's very scary. And I think that as professionals, it's very easy to kind of give advice mm-hmm. and like speak to individuals mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Guide individuals or families. But when you're the loved one in that situation and emotions are involved, so having Hidden in Plain Sight kind of gives you that practice of right. like that sort of, okay, I'm in this moment, mm-hmm. I suspect or I know or what if, mm-hmm. and being able to walk through that with someone so that it builds up that guardian's, you know, comfort level. And just remember, like, your concern and your worries, like, they're valid. Mm-hmm. Let's now like hone that into a curious and loving conversation that engages mm-hmm. the youth. And I think that's why like Hidden in Plain Sight, for example, works so well. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just, okay, these are three bullet points, this is what you do, but like you're in the space now.
Yeah, it's kind of a role playing, mm-hmm. but it's teaching skills that respectfully were not really developed
right.
in kind of the normal educational space, unless yeah. you were mm-hmm. in that specific, you know,
right, career,
mental health yes. or social services arena, in which case that was the training you got. But mm-hmm. as a right. general populace, no, we weren't mm-hmm. told what questions should right. we ask
right.
and with the right tone of voice, as opposed to, why are you doing this?
Exactly.
Yeah. Which we all remember, you know, our middle name only came out when we weren't doing good.
Right. And I think that, you know, parents and guardians, grandparents, you're only an expert in like yesterday, right? Because we have like that hindsight mm-hmm. ability, but you're new in today.
Yeah.
Right. And like that new moment with your child, and that's happening, like, sometimes you have that pressure of like, oh my God, I'm supposed to know what to do.
Right.
And I think that Hidden in Plain Sight kind of takes that away.
And it breaks the stigma too yes. for parents, where they're like worried that it's just my child. And mm-hmm. Jen comes out and she's like, no, this is like, you know, this system is targeting all kids this age, and it's a real problem. It's nothing to be ashamed about. And like, right. how can we now help those kids and support those kids so that if they are turning to this, what are other coping mechanisms that they can use to combat that sort
mm-hmm.
of?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, and that's where I think that was certainly an entry point, because schools clearly at that point were kind of the hot button. It was the hot topic.
Yeah.
So many people, school age particular, or even early college age, that was most of the overdoses was in that particular yep. mm-hmm. demographic.
Mm-hmm.
So this was at least the entree, and then along came Narcan, and now you had a tool to at least save a life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then that was just the start of the entire recovery process, right? Because the recovery, from what I've understood, is it's not a one and done thing. It's not a 90-day thing.
Yeah.
In some cases, there's no end in sight. You're constantly on a recovery path.
Correct.
Definitely. And like Narcan is just the beginning of the journey, usually people learning about Narcan, and then it's like, okay, great, now we have this tool, but how now are we going to help you on your recovery journey? So like, what are those referrals look like? What are those mm-hmm. what are those systems of care you can build up so right. you have, you know, a thriving life where like Narcan is just not just the only thing that right. SAFE does, which I think is sometimes a misconception, right?
Right. I think one of the biggest misconceptions, too, to add on mm-hmm. to what you're saying, Emma, Narcan is going to encourage substance use. I mm-hmm. think that's one of the biggest substance.
Right.
Like, a lot of communities do not want Narcan in there because they believe, well, now people are going to feel comfortable to use without, like, repercussions, so to speak.
Right.
Where, in actuality, as you mentioned, Steve, like, recovery is not a linear path.
Mm-hmm. No.
And so there is something called the cycle of change, and mm-hmm. people can be in different stages depending on circumstances, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the support.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't have someone think about long-term recovery if they're currently unhoused.
Sure.
Right? They're thinking about surviving.
Because mm-hmm. it's the whole person.
Exactly.
And whatever yeah. that support structure is, if there is one.
Exactly.
And if there isn't, then that is and that so, much more to build and
exactly,
provide.
Exactly. And so like Narcan is a tool to be able to, as that person is living their journey of recovery, where they may be, if they relapse, they're able to have a tool that's going to give them a new opportunity to try again tomorrow.
A new day.
Mm-hmm. A new day. And that's the way that we like to see harm reduction, is we're providing this individual a chance to think about, okay, like, tomorrow I'm going to work. Maybe today I'm on house. Mm-hmm. Let me get on X resources. Let me get and build on those natural networks so that they feel that they have the support for that longer term recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's a journey.
It's a journey. Like I mentioned, we're not an expert in today, right? So like, how are we supposed to, people that have fewer resources or are managing trauma, how are we expecting them to be an expert on their own? They need connection. They need support. Narcan is a reminder that, okay, somebody else cares enough about me living, right, that they provided this for me. And let me, you know, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but maybe next week, like, I'm going to be in a better position to take the next step.
So just to back up a little bit and kind some things together. So you have the hidden in plain sight room. I think it's still somewhat mobile, so you can bring it in different places and have the sessions and start the conversation. You have the Narcan training in various places so people can get the training so they can administer it quicker and save the first responders who are also trained on it, have it, etc. But time is of an essence in some cases, right? So, and then you've continued to look at kind of that life cycle of a person, and kind of you've gone back into the high school, you've got some peer-to-peer groups, you've got the suspension diversion program, I believe, right? And then I'm assuming you've got others, and that's where we're going to go along the way, because you're just trying to a little bit of time in your way, because it still takes money, it still takes resources to do all this.
Definitely, yeah. How we kind of break it up for people so they understand is, like, safe. We break it into three categories. So it's like the adolescent wellness, family recovery, and collaborative care. So I do a lot of the adolescent wellness stuff, and Shab does a lot of collaborative care, and Jim does the family recovery stuff, I'm sure.
Okay, so that's where the three,
three we kind of, we tried to break it into. But honestly, like, safe isn't more than just those three. We really just develop with the community, and whenever the community's a need is present, we try to make a program or, you know, a section for dedicated to support for that.
It's very fluid. So we're able to,
life is fluid. I mean, it's becoming, unfortunately, given the current administration, that much more challenging to deal with normal day-to-day stuff, never mind trying to deal with somebody who is not necessarily comfortable in their own skin in this world to begin with.
And you know, Emma, Jim, and myself, we have such a great working relationship, and being in the field for a in my time span, culture is very important, right, in terms of like employees. And I could say, like, hearing and experiencing, SAFE has a great working culture where it allows us to collaborate, it allows us to come up with ideas, to really be creative, to really have the opportunity to listen attentively, right? Not just listen to provide an advice, but listen to like work together, to collaborate. And so there are times where all three of us or all three of our departments are able to interact and work together as well. So we're able to provide that holistic wraparound support for members.
Yeah, because that's one thing, at least from my point of view, and given the varied background I've had, no man is an island. Somebody said that a long time ago, but it takes a village, is truly addressing that wraparound piece, because if somebody individually, depending upon whatever their circumstances are, don't have the family support, the neighbor support, the friend support, it still is needed. And if they're struggling, then that's where at least having, say, okay, now OD, you've got the Narcan, you've got the New Day, get into some resource process and then start building those support structures so that they can continue to take a step at a time.
It goes even, like, beyond that, too, because beyond us is, like, we are only as strong as, like, how the communities are, you know what I mean? So it's like our local partnerships, like with the police and fire, all of our school systems, like they all are like the backbone of what we do, because that's where we get all our referrals, like all, that's how we get the people that come to us that we can support. So it's really is like a, it is, it takes a village mindset.
It does. And even like sponsors and like donors and people that believe in the mission, like it allows us, so to backtrack a little bit as to why this is important, health insurances are great, definitely, but if an individual has therapy but it may not be enough or they need more, if we were to charge insurance for X service, it could be, I'm not saying it is, it could create a barrier, right? So now health insurance might say, hey, listen, we're not going to double dip, like you're receiving the same service,
right?
Versus like this family has therapy, maybe they need to change a therapist, maybe they need help changing insurance, maybe they need a different type, additional resources for whatever that they're know going through, they can still come to SAFE. And so like the people that believe in our mission are able to provide that financial support for us to keep on going, so that person can receive whatever support that they're charging their insurance for and some more. It takes a village. Not every organization can do it all. A therapist cannot do it all. A school system cannot do it all. And that is the mission of SAFE. Like, we want to bridge those gaps. The systems of care don't always communicate in the best of ways. So we want to be able to bridge that so that individuals don't feel as though there's a lapse in care.
Somebody still has my, you know, care guide, guidance, counseling. Trying to get the other term, but you get the idea that somebody is still there, kind of designated to watch this person. And going back to one, it's been mentioned a couple times, but listening, as I've experienced this as well, because I do an awful lot of listening as what I do normally in reporting, but as an organization, I at least have seen you learning from the listening. And then developing the programs to meet, well, it's, it may be kind of, well, this is the buzzword, but let's go here, because this is kind of the root. That's the problem area. Or at least what you can address.
Yes, it takes a lot of really getting to know the individuals that we're working with as they are, and actually being sympathetic, empathetic, really, like, this isn't just a job, it's, this is a person and this is their livelihood, and so it allows us to build that rapport with members to really understand what is the issue at hand, it's not just fentanyl, it's not just Narcan, what is going on, what's going beneath on that, with beneath that, what is going on with housing in each town, each neighborhood is so different,
like so unique,
so unique, and even deeper than that, like each house is its own world. So we really have to be present, and I feel such honor that when people reach out, they trust us enough that to allow us to be on that ride with them. You know, and it's honestly like an honor, because these are individuals that have been beaten by the system, are tired, they've lost trust, whether they're adolescents or adults, and they're like, we are trusting you because you're hearing us, you're listening. We may not have the answer, but we'll do this together.
We'll be in there together. And that's what we really do. We really encourage everyone to just come as they are, because healing can't really happen unless people are being who they are.
There may be a 12-step plan or a whatever plan, but whatever that plan is for that individual needs to meet that particular individual. And that, I think, is where, based upon your understanding, oh, Emma does this, Steve does this, this may work for you, and let's go this way as opposed to going that way.
So it is, it's an honor to just be a part of so many people's lives in the community, you know.
Yeah, and then I'm assuming, because I'm making the assumption, but having been in other roles somewhat similar, including not as life-affirming to that extent, you need some supports as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because you can't always be on the front line. You're almost frontline responders as well. So yeah, I'm assuming you do have, and knowing Jen and Jim, there's some support for you as well.
We support each other a lot. Like, it's like if one of us has a lot on our plate, like the other one's like, oh, I can handle this, I can take on this. The good thing is that me and Shav, we pretty much, like, we're trained, we know the same things, so, like, we can switch off for each other whenever that does happen. Yes. But we as a team, we work together to make
sure. And Jen's always involved. Like, Jen is always like, I'm a text away, I'm a call away. So, we do have our meetings, we have our trainings, we are always trying to be up to date with everything, and our organization is very big on making sure you're taking care of yourself.
Correct.
So if you need a mental health day, take that mental health day. If you need to go to an appointment, go to that appointment.
Yeah, because we can only help other people if we are okay ourselves.
If you're
Yes. And so there really isn't that, like, stigma of, like, oh my God, if I'm not doing well, then that, you know, that other organizations may have, or just as adult, like, being self-conscious. And again, like Emma said, we do very well in supporting one another and just being available to listen to one another. So at any moment, we're always talking about, like, what happened on the weekend, or, hey, like, this is how I'm feeling, and, like, really just listening and brain dumping so that we're available to one another and as well as the people coming in.
Right. Yep. And I know, at least from your schedule, Friday mornings, it's just kind of like a drop-in safe space.
Yes. Yeah, that's Jim.
Periodically, you've got the safe cafe with some music and open mic performances. So you've got a variety of things in addition to kind of the regular programs, if you will. But just come by, stop in, see what happens.
And we always, you know, make an appointment, call us. Like, we will never say no. We'll say, like, let's figure this out. People can always call us. People can always say, hey, like, I need to come in. I need to speak to someone. Even if they're not understanding their what type of support that they may need, but they know that they need some sort of assistance, some sort of support, always feel free to give us a call. We will figure it out. If they just need somebody to talk to, somebody to listen to them, we will always have our doors open.
And it's, I mean, it's you can see it with, like, we've just expanded from, I think it was, like, we've had, like, 15, usually 15 communities, and now we've done trainings, programs, clients in 55 communities in Massachusetts. So it's been massive growth.
I mean, a few months ago, it was only, like, 33. And now it's, like, 55. So, it doesn't matter the town. It doesn't. I mean, I've personally gotten calls from New York, from Virginia,
Rhode Island.
Yeah. And we're never going to turn those calls away. We're never going to say you're not in our catchment area.
Well, I think the nature of the organization, you're relatively unique in terms of this space. And then sitting in the space and then building the bridges like you do, that's your role. But from what I understood, there's not really that many other orgs that are like you. So you can still have calls coming in from anywhere saying, how do you do this? Let's try and replicate this somewhere else. If not, hey, can you do that for us?
Well, one of the biggest barriers in care is the wait times.
Huge barrier.
So we're able to provide that support. And I'm sure there are other organizations that want to do that, but are unable to do that by the nature of what their job is. So again, like, having the privilege of being so fluid, right, allows us to be and to form or merge into whatever the community needs.
And that's kind of what's kind of spurred on what actually Shav created, which is, like, our 90-day support plans. That's a big part of collaborative care. And, like, I don't know if you want to talk about that, but that's been, like, an amazing resource for the community.
So we have a 90-day support plan. And so, again, anybody calling, it doesn't matter if they are already receiving resources, services elsewhere or not. they need support, and we will create a 90-day plan, and we walk with the individual identifying what are some of your supports, what are some of the barriers. We go over their dimension of wellness. Mm-hmm. What are the areas that, let's identify your strengths, because I'm sure you have some.
Right.
And what are the areas that you want to improve on? And let's build on that. Let's build on your natural resources. Mm-hmm. So we're able to identify goals that that person really wants to work on, while at the same time connecting them to the resources that they need.
So we're overcoming that barrier of like long wait times, lack of care. Like that person will get immediate care, you know, and we'll work with them until we're able to get them even more resources.
Right. Effectively repopulating the village if pieces of it were there, maybe, or maybe not at all, and you're helping them over that at least 90 days to help pull those pieces together and have some support in order to do so.
Right, and it takes about like 3 months for, like, let's say therapy to kick in, for an insurance change, housing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like a good time, and the individual can decide, like, I need more, I need less.
Right.
So we're constantly evaluating the support plan so that it fits the need of the individual and it's appropriate to their circumstance.
Funding certainly, from what I understand, primarily grants, but certainly donations and sponsorships, etc., are certainly welcomed at any time. But through, I guess, the opioid settlement funds, that's been a key piece, because clearly you're in, that's one of the key reasons why you're in that space.
100%. Yeah, we have a lot of diversified funding for sure, and like now, as the economy is now too, it's even more important for us to diversify as much as possible, which is also why we're really excited about our gala in a month too, our big event.
We'll talk about that May 8th, I think it's a Thursday night. It's on the community calendar, and I'll continue to share tips and trips as things come out to remind people, have it be aware.
We're really excited. It gets bigger every year, so this will be our biggest one so far. So
every year it gets bigger, and it goes back to your point where I think more people are hearing about what SAFE is doing and the uniqueness of it. The fact that it doesn't matter what your barrier of need may be, give us a call, and I think people like that. One of our biggest goal is to ensure that whoever calls doesn't hang up thinking, oh, this was a waste of time.
Right.
Because usually people are calling on the worst day of their lives, you know, a lot of times, and that we really try to honor that, and that's why we never turn away anyone for support.
Because I think that's their first step. They've at least acknowledged, I need help, so they made the call. So you have to create that kind of welcome porch so that they can continue to come in. Otherwise, heaven forbid, who knows what's going to happen to them.
And Emma's program, which is amazing, our diversion program, it's very preventative. We understand, you know, with substance use, preventative care is very, very important. And just being able to acknowledge even like the youngest of our humans to say, wow, like I can develop these tools, I am being heard, I think is a great asset to our community.
Yeah, I mean, the diversion, it's really evolved in the last like 3 years. Jen started it actually when I came on. It was like a one-day program. Like, we didn't really have a curriculum. And then I was like, all right, let's try to build something from this. So we did we do 3 days in our office from 9 to 2. And at this point, I think we've worked with, like, over 20 school districts. It's great how much has evolved. And, like, the schools are so supportive now of the program, which has been, like, an amazing journey to watch. Because diversion sounds so scary, I feel like, and like a lot of times the students come and they think they're going to be like yelled at and like,
you know, think
like,
they're in detox,
they think they're in danger, like they're like, oh, I'm really in trouble. But we're really, the program is really, it's a support program, right? Like, it's preventative, it's also a recovery program too, because a lot of kids are coming there who are addicted to whatever substance that may be, cannabis, nicotine, alcohol sometimes, you know. A lot of them have things going on with their families, and it's like we try to really, again, take a whole person approach to
figure out what's going on, the trigger.
Exactly, and it's never about like, oh, like the schools know this too, you're never going to come to the program and be like, oh, I'm done, I'm quitting substances completely, 100%, right? It's not, like we said, recovery is not linear. So we try to give the students the tools so that they're able to make that decision on their own if they want to quit or what they want to do. And at least they have those tools that when they are ready to quit, you know, right, it's possible for them.
It is.
Mm. Yeah, and I think from the school's perspective, as opposed to, you know, you're suspended 2 days, 5 days, 10 days, that really doesn't help the student because, no, ironically, this it's an education institution, and now, yeah, you're putting somebody out.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So here you're providing 3 days of education, yep, in the tools specifically to help the individual. So hopefully, yeah, maybe it, right, maybe somebody comes back once, but then they shouldn't have to come back,
yeah,
again.
Exactly. And it's a space for them to be open and honest, right? It's like a safe third space is what I like to call, right, it, because it's like, it's you're either at home or you're at school, and like a lot of students don't feel safe talking about, true, them using substances in school. So we offer a place where students, mm-hmm, can come and they can be honest. They're not going to get in trouble. And it, usually like it's like the first time students are acknowledging,
right,
like their substance use and why they're using substances, and, yeah, like, yeah, what are other tools you can turn to deal with stress, anxiety,
right,
whatever that may,
right,
you may be struggling with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. As they're navigating their identity, as they're navigating, mm-hmm, like, social conformity.
It's an interesting and challenging period of life. I mean, fortunately, it was a while ago. I remember that very well, though.
Yeah. Everyone does.
You don't forget your teens and years.
No. But, yeah, it's really amazing because also teens from other schools come together every week, so it's a lot of teens don't know the other teens coming,
right,
in, and it's a chance for, like, they bond so much, honestly.
Yes. Well, it's a fresh, yeah, start too, because you're not going into a class, mm-hmm, where you know everybody because, yep, you grew up, they were already on, yep, the block,
or maybe you're being bullied too, yeah,
yes, mm-hmm, then potential for that too, yep, and how are you going to discover that unless it just comes up, right?
Exactly.
So at least having new faces, yes, new relationships,
yes.
Yeah. And also, like, it makes them feel like, oh, I'm not alone. Like, I'm struggling with something, but
the
other kids are struggling, yeah, too. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah, I'm not isolated.
Right.
So,
or like in this experience, right? A teen could share they lost someone to substance use, and, mm-hmm, another teen can share that, and now they're able to, you know, be like, wow, like Emma said, like, I'm not alone in this. Like, my other peers wouldn't understand, but, mm-hmm, we can now, we're in a space where we can talk about this,
sure,
mm-hmm, and unpack and build tools to cope.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the coping, grieving, everybody's going to have to choose and figure out their own way. And some are going to be relatively easy, some are not.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends.
Totally depends. And a lot of the teens that come to us, they've experienced so much challenges and hardships already in their life. And we talk about how that can also be a positive thing, though, right? Because,
right,
that builds your resilience. That builds, you can use those challenges and hardships, you know, to better yourself as a person.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm,
I think that's something that teens are like, that's a, right, crazy concept to them. They're like, wow, like, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not just going to end up being a failure because of this.
Right.
Like, that doesn't,
right,
define me.
Right.
Like, how,
right,
do you, like, look at a challenge and make it into an opportunity.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Making lemonade from lemons.
Yes.
Is another way of phrasing, but it's, uh-huh, so true. I think, and that's one of the media, I don't think, does well in that regard as well, because everybody's kind of the instant overnight success,
mm-hmm,
not understanding and not telling that behind story that, you know, they may have fallen down 99,000 times.
Right. Yes.
The 99,001th time they get up.
Exactly.
And that was the key.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we do show instances, you know, and have those conversations. Like, what are some of your goals? What are some of your values?
Mm-hmm.
What is your anchor? Like, what is guiding you? Like, when something tough is coming your way, like, what are your protective factors? What are, mm-hmm, the things that you can fall into?
Sure.
How do you identify, mm-hmm, a positive mentor? A positive friend?
Mm-hmm.
How do you, you know, have uncomfortable conversations with your guardians? You know, how do your guardians overcome, mm-hmm, challenges? And having those conversations, because you don't know what you don't know. And obviously, like, as adults, we already went through that.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we make the assumptions that they should also already know.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
and,
right,
they don't.
I did this, I grew up this, my house is like this, so theirs is like, mm-hmm, that, and it's it could be on the other spectrum or on the other end of the other spectrum.
Exactly.
If not somewhere in between.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, we teach kids, if they don't know how to read, we teach them how to read. If they don't know how to write, we teach them how to write. If they don't know math, we teach them math. But when they don't know how to behave, we punish them. And so I think SAFE gives them that space of, like, I can be myself, I can make mistakes and not be punished.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's key.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful space, I think. I'm like, you guys are so lucky to have a space like this, not because I'm biased, but even in the generation where it's okay to talk about these things, it's okay to acknowledge mental health. And understanding that a lot of the adults in that person's life probably did not have that opportunity.
True.
Also acknowledging how much more hardships teens face today than they did even 10 years ago.
The world is so completely different. So different.
Completely.
And that disconnect, right? So, like, here we have an adult that probably didn't have an opportunity when they were a youth to talk about their feelings and emotions, and they're probably learning that now as an adult. And that world is completely different.
Right.
And now here we are in our century, in our generation, and teens are able to express themselves, but the adults don't know how to support them in the world that they exist.
Right.
So it's like we're able at SAFE to talk to both. And I think that's beautiful. Like, being able to talk to the parents so that they can understand this generation or how to speak to this generation. Because you can't use the same tactics to your own, right?
Yeah.
And
each kid's different.
Each kid is so different. Right. And now the youth to understand, to kind of have some understanding as to why the adults in their life may be responding and reacting in certain ways.
Sure.
So that we can bridge that gap in communication.
Their path was totally different in their growing up. They did not have this social media thing, which only came on really in the last 10 years when I think people have gone back and identified was Apple introduced such and such, and then Instagram came in, and then the facing camera, so selfies became a thing.
Right.
Selfies were never a thing prior to that. Now you have to set up a tripod to take a picture of a family shot.
Yeah. So it's like the social media, but it's also like peer pressure. Peer pressure is completely different, right? Like, adults see peer pressure, I think, as like you go somewhere and someone's like, do this kind of thing. But peer pressure now is like when kids go into a bathroom and everybody is smoking around them, and they told themselves that day maybe they were going to try not to smoke. They feel the pressure now, right?
Sure.
Their friends are all smoking and they're like, well, I might as well. Most of the kids I speak to, they're smoking because they're just like everybody else is doing it.
It's acceptable amongst the group, or it's seemingly acceptable amongst the group.
Right. Yes. And it's how they social, most of them may socialize.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Right. So they're talking, they're having a good time, and they might pass your vape. And so what are they going to do? And sometimes, again, like, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
If they don't know how to, like, refuse or how to
politely say
quick-witted,
no.
You know, to pass it along. We're social creatures, and especially at an adolescent age, that is where that is the strongest. They create packs.
We need to be part of the tribe.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And it's just
how we survive.
Right. That is how we have survived. Like, Darwinism is not true. We are actually social creatures. Like, you know, like, every animal has survived based if they were in a pack.
Sure.
And so that is how we are. We were made to socialize. We were made to feel belonged, loved, welcomed. And people will do things even if they don't believe in those things, just to feel welcomed and integrated.
So it's been an amazing story.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm sure you've got more to do. you don't yet know what you got to do, but you're going to find out eventually because you're keeping the ears to the ground. You've got a feedback system already kind of built in because you're seeing the people coming in from wherever, bringing in whatever, and something new will pop up, and then connections couple of things will start coming together. Ooh, maybe there's a thing there we need to do.
Yeah. Come spend a day at State Office. You'll never be bored. always changing, always adopting to, like, you know.
Every day looks so different. So different,
yeah. Right.
You can try your best to stick to, like, a schedule, a plan.
But things change.
Things change, and we're very flexible to it.
Right.
Yeah.
So what else do people in the community need to know other than, oh, if you got a problem, SAFE may be the first call? Anything else they need to know?
That's a good question.
Like, in terms of, like, themselves in general?
Or about SAFE? Clearly, you're not here to solve the world's problems, but you've got a space, as you've elucidated, in terms of the three specific arenas, and those kind of evolve over time.
Yeah. I will say, I will definitely encourage families, members of the community, individuals, always reach out to us. If they're just, even if they're noticing trends, hey, this is going on in our community. We don't have X resources in our community. Always reach out to us. We're always open to listen. We will never come into a community with resources. We would love for the community to tell us.
Yeah, and we always want our, you know, our community to grow. So even if someone's not struggling with something, if they want to volunteer, they want to help out, we always are open to new people coming in. Yes. So if you feel like this is something that's close, the mission's close to your heart, like, reach out to us. If you know somebody that's struggling, you can connect us.
Certainly make the referral.
Yes.
By all means.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And just reminding individuals that they're not alone.
Yes.
It's really, even though we live in a digital age where we're supposed to be so connected, I think we're very prone to feeling very lonely.
Right.
Because we kind of become desensitized.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. To everything that's happening
in the
around
world.
In the world. And so that human connection, and we can cater to hybrid, so telehealth, in person. Like, we're here, you know, and we just don't want people in our community to feel that they have to go through something alone.
Right. That's a good way to close it. And of course, you'll take money.
Donations are always welcome.
For the gala, and then support all the other programs that you've got.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Again, like, all of the donations just make it possible. Like, if you are a donor and there's something that you truly believe in that you think your community needs, like, talk to us. Like,
let us have that conversation.
We can become so creative because we understand, we work with the people. You know, I work with inmates as well, and I'm constantly listening to, like, their experiences, what they have to overcome, their systems of care that they have to navigate. And so we're able, again, to, like, between the three departments, to communicate often.
Sure.
So we are able to provide this multi-generational support and have a multi-generational understanding. So if people have things that they're like, hey, I think we need this, because I love SAFE. It's because I love SAFE. We're able to provide that kind of support.
Right. And I think you mentioned the key word where we started talking to, in terms of, and we developed on the youth a bit, but the multi-general piece. So you've grandparents raising kids, you've got support for that level as well. So it truly is multi-generational.
Yes, we have support. Again, out of COVID or the pandemic, we were able to also create our diaper bank.
Yes.
So I remember calling all these supposed existing diaper banks, would never get a response. And I reached out to so many. And it was very frustrating because here we are, people scared, confused. Resources were lacking. People were not working. Diapers.
In some cases, if they were on the shelf, they were expensive. In many cases, they weren't even on the shelf.
Formulas. And so we were able to work together, be like, we need to do something.
Sure.
Members of our community. And again, like, taking away that stigma of, like, okay, you live in the suburbs, you're supposed to have financial resources.
Right.
There's all kinds of human beings in our community.
Yeah.
And honoring that. And so, with, like, our blood drive, with our medication take back, with our car seat drive, our diaper bank, people are able to come with a specific need and then be like, wow, actually, I think I need more support.
Yeah. A lot of times, like you're saying, the multi-generational thing, we'll have a student that's referred to us from Diversion and we'll work with that student. And then maybe one of the parents also has a young kid and they need diapers. So they get diapers and wipes from us. Or maybe like the other parent wants to work with Jim in family recovery. You know, it really is like whole families we are working with.
Right. Yes. Yep. Yes.
And I think you also have a postpartum, which is also another kind of untapped arena prior.
Yes. So Steph, who is our licensed social worker, she noticed that there was this need. This is something that's very dear to her.
Yep.
And she mentioned and she realized, like, we have somewhat of these type of support groups, but they cost a lot of money.
Sure.
And if you're a new mom.
And there was also no clinical support groups in any close area for any moms. No support groups run by licensed social workers.
Right.
So the ones that were licensed, like you were saying, were incredibly expensive.
And so imagine you have like a new baby, you're probably, I don't know if you're working or not, but life is crazy as just a mom in your biology. To drive.
And they don't give you a book that says this is what you need to do.
And so being able to then even evolve her group where she was like, wait a minute, we also need like a virtual component to this. And before that, we also had our DV support group, domestic violence.
Right.
And we were able, again, based on the needs and the trends that were happening in our community, and to provide that option of virtual or in-person support, our family anonymous group, you have that option, virtual or support. We have a Sober Moms Club. We have AA, grandparents raising grandchildren.
And sibling support group.
Sibling support group. Like, and I love our sibling support group because there are a lot of support groups for families. However, how a sibling is experiencing something compared to a parent or guardian is very different.
Sure. Why are they getting all the attention? What about me? You know?
Right?
That's just like, one aspect.
Or, hey, I understand my sibling more than my guardian does.
Right.
Right? Something like only a sibling could really understand. And being able to provide a space just for them, I think is like, wow.
Yep.
You don't have to be in a room with guardians. They're like, I'm scared, and all these things are happening. It's a space just for siblings. I think it's like, to me, it's just mind-blowing.
Thank you for elaborating because, it's just, you do a lot. I'm sure there's more to do, but your wish list is your wish list, and you'll get there eventually if you have the funding and the resources for it. But in the meantime, you provide a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. We try our best.
We try. But we're here for the community.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, thank you for doing what you do. Thank you for taking time to share about what you do so people can say, oh, that's what they do.
I know there's so much stuff that it's hard to zone in on each thing. So thank you for having us.
Thank you. No, the elevator pitch is definitely not 3 seconds.
Make sure you go to the 30th floor.
Exactly. Yeah.
Indeed.
Appreciate
it. Thank you again, listeners. Thank you for listening. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.